Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder where God is when 49 innocent people are murdered in cold blood and another 50 or so are also gunned down and wounded. Well, my friend, of course, that's a very fair question. This is going to sound like the understatement of the century because you already know this, but of course, the Bible commands human beings not to murder. It's one of the early commands. It's in the top 10. I hope you also know that the Bible promises justice for those who do murder. Someday we will all stand before God. We will all answer before God. The Bible does tell us that in the grand scheme of things, in human history and eternity, justice will prevail. I know that's not going to make the families of their loved ones feel much better, because lately, justice seems to be turned on its head. Yeah, another massacre. In America, it's becoming so commonplace, hopefully never so commonplace that we ever get used to it. But we did have another horrific attack from a Muslim jihadist. It's been practically the only thing talked about in the news. It happened exactly 1 week ago today. Now, I missed President Obama's first live speech last Sunday because he was speaking right around the time when I needed to teach a morning Sunday school class. But I want you to know that before I taught my class, I got up, looked out at those in attendance, and I told them just exactly what we could expect to hear from Obama. A lot of stuff about the need for gun control, a lot of talk about hate speech, and as much as this incident took place in a gay bar, nothing about this incident being related to Islam, not even the distinction, because not even those that believe in radicalism are not claiming that all Muslims like that, but not even the distinction radical Islam would Obama use. That was my prediction. He did not disappoint. Not that I'm a prophet. I'm not. Not that that was a difficult thing to predict. It wasn't. But I still make these easy predictions just so that people can more easily see the agendas of our politicians who have very obvious, very transparent agendas. I also predicted that somewhere in the liberal camp, this whole thing would be blamed not on Muslims, but evangelical Christians and or conservatives and or the GOP. Well, the ACLU promptly jumped in and blamed evangelical Christians. And then here's what the New York Times wrote. Hate crimes don't happen in a vacuum. They occur where bigotry is allowed to fester, where minorities are vilified, and where people are scapegoated for political gain. Tragically, this is the state of American politics, driven too often by Republican politicians who see prejudice as something to exploit, not extinguish. See? No mention that the man was a jihadist who bragged about his loyalty to ISIS. And by the way, no mention of the many, many, many Christians who donated blood for the victims. You see, that wouldn't fit the PC narrative. The narrative lie goes like this. Since Christians do not condone the practice of homosexuality, we must automatically conclude that Christians hate homosexuals. Really? Hate homosexuals? Seriously? Now, whenever two human beings disagree about something, we assume that hatred abides. Ladies and gentlemen, how many atheists have I debated on my program? Did I ever once accuse one person of being hateful toward me simply because they disagreed with my lifestyle, with my beliefs, which they disagreed with vehemently, I should say. Yes, Christians were donating blood last week. Christians were donating food last week, and not just any food, Chick-fil-A food. You remember Chick-fil-A, the restaurant that has been called hateful simply because their owner once admitted during an interview that he upheld traditional marriage, a subject he never brought up, a subject brought up by the journalist interviewing him as a litmus test. He never said he hated gays. He never said he wouldn't hire gays. He never said he wouldn't serve gays. The media says that about him now with all the historical revision, but he never said that. He never even had a desire to start a conversation about gays. The discussion was created for him by the journalist. Anyway, this same restaurant, this same Chick-fil-A stayed open on Sunday. Now, that's a day when they're generally not open, but they remained open last Sunday and served free sandwiches to anybody who was donating blood, and free sandwiches to hundreds of law enforcement officers and other first responders. This we do not hear much about, not in the liberal media. But you'll hear it from conservatives. You'll hear it from me. Today you're going to hear a lot of things from me. And let's start by hearing this. Whereas the Quran and the Bible both call homosexuality a sin, Christians are not commanded to kill gays. Christians are not killing gays. And that doesn't mean I'm saying that every single Muslim wants to kill gays either. I'm not. But I'll tell you this. A lot of Muslims, when interviewed while quickly denying that they are terrorists, will express still a desire to enact Sharia law. And not merely in the Middle East. Even in countries that are supposed to have democracies. Even in Europe. Even in America. So how do countries under various degrees of Sharia law treat homosexuals? Well, homosexuals are executed in countries like Saudi Arabia, you know, our allies, our buddies. Saudi Arabia executes homosexuals, as does Iran, Mauritania, Sudan, Somalia, and Yemen. In Palestinian sectors, gays have been murdered by police and unruly mobs. Gays there are arrested for their alleged crime. They've been beaten, thrown in prison, made to submerge their heads in excrement. Meanwhile, Egypt supposedly has legal safeguards in place, but gays in Egypt also get persecuted. And when the Taliban ran Afghanistan, they systematically eliminated homosexuals, not to mention the inhumane things they did to women who wanted rights. One would think this religion would be viewed as the PC movement's greatest nightmare, but in an ironic twist of fate, Islam managed to become a politically correct religion. It took a 9/11 to make this happen. After slitting the throats of stewardesses, ramming planes into buildings, and then in the years that have followed, beheading people while chanting to Allah and then posting the whole thing on the internet where all can share in the joy. Somehow, the result of this is that Islam became known as the religion of peace. And woe to any who say otherwise. The PC phrase tolerance has been hijacked by the most intolerant religion of all time, and they are using it to enforce a kind of pre-Sharia. Catching on, people? Catching on to the rules? If you disagree with a same-sex lifestyle, you are a homophobe. But don't think you'll avoid being labeled if you, on the other hand, stick up for the gay community and speak out against those who would hurt them. Because if you criticize Muslim countries and Muslim terrorists who murder homosexuals, you are now an Islamophobe. You can't win. In many European countries, it's now against the law to criticize either group. It's called hate speech. The two most protected people groups in the world, gays and the religion whose Sharia law often executes gays. But don't expect our president to acknowledge this contradiction. His mind is one track. In his initial speech last week, Obama talked about the need for gun control. He talked about the hate which murdered people in a gay nightclub. He did not mention the phrase radical Islam or radical jihad. For this, he came under criticism by Donald Trump. And in response to Trump, Obama said, "There is no magic in the phrase radical Islam. It's a political talking point. It's not a strategy. And the reason I am careful about how I describe this threat has nothing to do with political correctness and everything to do with actually defeating extremism." Well, Mr. President, if there's nothing magic to the phrase radical Islam, then why are you so careful to avoid the phrase? You tell people to keep their eyes open and to report suspicious behavior, but how many people have admitted openly that they were afraid to do just that? For fear of being called an Islamophobe, or fear that your attorney general would prosecute them, as you said you would to people that speak out too much against that religion. People did come forward in Fort Hood when a certain Nadel Hassad exhibited suspicious behavior, but the army ignored the warnings, not wanting to look anti-Muslim. He ended up gunning down 13 people while shouting Allah Akbar. You, Mr. President, responded by calling this not an incident of Islamic terror. In that case, you wouldn't even call it any regular plain old general terror, but rather you dubbed that incident as workplace violence. Yeah, workplace violence. As a result, the military victims' families did not even qualify for government aid or Purple Hearts. And Mr. President, even when you use the word terrorist, it's a very broad term. So is your latest term, homegrown extremist. Meanwhile, while President Obama sticks his head in the sand so deep that even an ostrich would be embarrassed, jihadists enthusiastically identify themselves. Why can't you, Mr. President? Last week's killer claimed to be a Muslim jihadist. But as usual, President Obama, in his wisdom, knows better. He knows that even when terrorists themselves use the term, they are not true Muslim. Obama insists that no Muslim terrorist organization is inspired by Islam. Nobody from ISIS, nobody from Hezbollah, nobody from Al-Qaeda. Terrorists are not Muslims. Okay, Mr. President, fine. Have it your way. Keep claiming sincere denial. In your heart of hearts, you do not believe terrorists are true Muslims. So why was Osama bin Laden given a proper Muslim sea burial by your orders? And by the way, Mr. President, while we're on the subject of changing subjects, while you remind us that this is not a Muslim issue, but rather a gun control issue, let's remember the guns you sold during the Fast and Furious scandal to the drug cartels. And on the subject of weapons, how about the $150 billion you've given to Iran, the greatest terrorist nation and enabler of terrorism in the world? So arming Iran is just fine. Innocent American citizens arming themselves, that's another story. Is that the way it works, Mr. President? And before we leave the subject of gun control, a subject you never like to leave, a subject the Pope never likes to leave, the same Pope who also refused to talk about Islamic terror last week, but who talked about gun control as much as you did, Mr. President, it does need to be pointed out that neither you nor the Pope are ever, ever without gun protection. Neither of you travel anywhere without armed bodyguards. Neither of you live anywhere without bodyguards. The White House is guarded with guns. The Vatican is guarded by a Swiss army. You can't even take your family to Yosemite without having armed bodyguards, Mr. President. And I don't begrudge you that. I don't blame you. You know why? Because if you didn't do that, you'd be an open target. Because terrorists tend to ignore those who have armed bodyguards. Terrorists like the Orlando Muslim terrorists. And notice I won't use the guy's name. I won't dignify the man by using his name. But I will name something else. Paying attention, everybody? I will name his cause. It seems his cause is called radical Islam. This radical Islamic jihadist cased out Disney World as his first choice for murder. But he rejected Disney World. You want to know why? I'll give you a hint. It wasn't the alligators, although that's another horrible, tragic story. But the reason he called off Disneyland was not a soft enough target. It was not advertised as a gun-free zone. So don't lecture us about guns. By the way, you can also stop lecturing us about building walls in as much as they're building a much bigger fence around the White House. I guess protection is only important when you personally need protection. Is that how it works, Mr. President? Anyway, Trump needs no lectures about building walls, and Trump needs no lectures about his intention to halt immigration from Muslim nations. Not from you, Mr. President, because Trump gets enough self-righteous sanctimonious lectures from his own party. The GOP elites are abandoning Trump at the flank. Ryan defends his criticism of Trump by claiming to represent a separate but equal branch of government. Well, that's true. Congress is supposed to be a separate but equal branch of government. If only Ryan had took that attitude toward President Obama. How many unconstitutional executive orders has Obama gotten away with while the separate but equal Congress was under the control of the Republicans? And let's not leave out Hillary. Hillary advises the GOP to confront Trump. Hey, GOP, doesn't that tell us something right there? Or is Hillary saying this out of love because her goal is to help you win the election? Gotta love Hillary. Her supporters tout her experience as Secretary of State. Yeah, experience, impressive resume. The GOP should discuss this stellar record at every turn. Hillary and Obama lying together about the terrorist attack on Benghazi, claiming it was spontaneous violence in response to an anti-Muslim video, because the truth would not have helped them win the election. The truth? Another Al-Qaeda attack on their watch, which left four Americans dead in the face of our military being commanded to stand down and wage no rescue. You see, this did not fit the 2012 narrative that the world was safer from terrorists as a result of the Obama administration. Safe because despite all the cowering and all the apologizing and all the behind kissing, at least Osama bin Laden was dead. Osama bin Laden, the man who once again wasn't a true Muslim, but still got a Muslim barrier under orders from our president, who doesn't believe he's a true Muslim. This is Bob Siegel, making the obvious obvious.
Now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Back to 1170 The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. I'd like to invite those of you that live in the San Diego area to an event next Sunday. This event was planned several weeks ago before the horrible news in Orlando, but it's going to sound like it wasn't, but it was. Back in the year 1996, I wrote a play. The play is called Closets, Kings, and Other Points of View. It was, back in the year 1996, a futuristic drama, futuristic in its day, as I projected that the time would come when Christian freedom would be challenged regarding the issue of same-sex relationships. Many, even close friends, told me I was being unrealistic in my concerns about the alleged slippery slope. They do not tell me that anymore. Using a lawsuit in the story to create a courtroom drama, the play served as a vehicle for showing both sides of the discussion. And now, years later, when fiction has become truth, I will be performing the play again. I would like to invite you, then, to another of my one-man plays, a dramatic reading where I will change my voice for every character, Closets, Kings, and Other Points of View, next Sunday morning, Skyline Church, 10:30 a.m. Admission is free. The year is 1996. A woman is asked to discontinue her Sunday school class due to her same-sex lifestyle. In response, she defies the idea of separation between church and state and files a lawsuit against the church. With the courtroom as a platform, the practice of homosexuality is debated. Is it right? Is it wrong? Are people born that way? Is it a learned behavior? Once again, I wrote this drama 16 years ago. I've performed it all over the country. It was designed to promote respectful conversation, and it received, at that time, enthusiastic audience response, even from people whose viewpoints were challenged. But the play was also a warning about how gay activism might someday limit religious freedom. With all that's going on today, this drama is now more relevant than ever. These days, some people feel the need to demonize those with homosexual struggles. Others feel compelled to endorse the lifestyle as politically correct. This play, Closets, Kings, and Other Points of View, challenges people to sit down and honestly discuss this volatile issue in a civil manner without all the name-calling and stereotyping. That's Closets, Kings, and Other Points of View next Sunday morning, Skyline Church, 10:30 a.m. The details, directions, which building, which room, that can all be found on my website. Just go to the front page of my website, and there's a link that'll take you into all kinds of information. Now, again, if you ever want to weigh in on any of this, you can reach me over the internet, Facebook, Twitter, questions@bobsiegel.net. That's questions@bobsiegel, SIEGEL.net. Regarding my question in the monologue about Obama insisting terrorists are not true Muslims, and then me asking why, if that's true, he made sure Osama bin Laden received a Muslim burial, Peter says, good point, brother. Janine likes the point, but adds her own observation of irony. She says, well, he ignores the extinction of Assyrian Christians. David says, because he didn't want to provoke Muslims any more than he had to. Not that I particularly support Obama or his policies. Well, I appreciate this. This is somebody who thinks outside the box. He's obviously not somebody who defends Obama, right or wrong. But he thinks that maybe Obama is using some sense here because he doesn't want to upset Muslims more than he has to. And I appreciate the comment, David, but I do have a response. What would make peaceful Muslims turn violent, exactly? Will they be so offended that we called them violent that they will then turn violent to teach us a lesson? If Obama is that concerned about a violent response, it suggests he doesn't even believe his own blather about this being a religion of peace. Steve says, because Mr. Obama is a Muslim, and he wanted his brother to have a proper burial. Okay, well, Steve was kind of rooting for my comment, but I'm afraid I can't agree with Steve either. Steve, I am not convinced that Obama is a Muslim. But I am convinced he's an ignorant, arrogant, narcissistic, blithering idiot who truly believes his own Marxist ideology, that he's incapable of admitting that he has ever made a mistake, that he has an agenda to humble America so that she will no longer be the superpower she once was, or colonialist, imperialist power, as he would put it, that he uses the methods of Saul Alinsky very effectively. And I'm also convinced that while he takes advantage of the spineless, worthless GOP, which complains about Trump, even though they created the vacuum that Trump filled, the radical Islamic Bushes take advantage of Obama, viewing him as a worthless idiot. See, you don't have to believe in conspiracy theories to still be critical of Obama. I just proved it. Tim says, Obama did identify the enemy by calling this an act of terror. Tim, Obama doesn't mind the word terrorist in the abstract because his Department of Homeland Security has a broad list of people whom they consider potential terrorists. You know who's on the list? Potential terrorists. Military vets. Anybody that expresses concern about our borders. The pro-life movement, and any who would be critical of his administration. Well, if that's how he's going to define terror, of course he doesn't mind using the word terrorist, but the specific terrorist organizations who have actually declared war on the United States are Muslim terrorists. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric.
Looking for a new book you won't be able to put down? Push the Winds Around is a romance set in the context of science fiction. Dr. Brandon Krieger is given the opportunity of a lifetime, a psychologist's dream. Through the usage of his physics professor friend's time machine, Brandon travels 20 years back through time in an attempt to change one man's destiny. Tom Kyle, a convicted and unremorseful murderer, is located in the past when he was a six-year-old boy. Brandon's mission? To alter Tom Kyle's path and prevent him from being a vicious killer. Matters are complicated when Brandon finds himself falling in love with young Tom's mother. Push the Winds Around, a novel by Bob Siegel. Available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Flossy is no stranger to our program. I had him on last March to talk about many police-related incidents that have been in the news regarding arrests, false charges against the police department of racism, things like that. Ed is a retired police sergeant from the San Jose PD and has been involved with law enforcement for more than 27 years. But now he also has a new book coming out. It's called In Context, Understanding Police Killings of Unarmed Citizens. Ed, welcome back to our program.
Thanks, Bob.
So tell us a little bit about this book of yours. How long ago, it was published just in the last month or so, right?
Yeah, it came out on an online version about a month and a half ago, and then we finally got some print versions out there. It's available on Amazon and a couple other different sources. Caliber Press is actually going to be the one putting it out in paperback, if you will. But it's out there now, and it's available. Anybody want to search on it, search online for it, they can find it.
Well, I'm glad it's in both versions. I put my books out in both versions, too. But I got to tell you, I'm always more excited when the print copy comes out than the Kindle and Nook. Maybe it's just my age catching up with me.
Yeah, I think it's just having something in your hand that represents
it. Is, yeah. Plus, I'm on my computer. I'm online all day long. It's just nice to do a few things where I'm not staring at the computer screen.
Yeah.
But anyway.
And it's a very good book. I mean, it's very easy to read. They did a really good job formatting it. The font is nice. You'll get several hundred pages in before you even know that you're reading the book.
And I believe you co-authored this with some other people. I want to make sure I give them credit, too.
I did. Actually, the two co-authors that I worked with, one is Nick Selby, and he's a police detective out of Texas. And his specialty is actually digital crimes like child exploitation images, financial crimes, and other internet crimes. And his background is in information security and intelligence, and he's a fire instructor, too. And then the other author is Ben Singleton. He's a 10-year veteran street cop who specializes in narcotics and fugitive apprehension. He's also a trainer in range and including taser and defensive tactics.
Now, how did the three of you connect? Did you know each other from the past, or did you meet just over this project?
I met Nick several years ago, and then we reconnected when I saw that he was putting this project together, and then he quickly asked me to come in based on my experience and my training in the area of use of force, being a expert witness and qualified in federal and state court on the areas of use of force and defensive tactics.
Okay, the process of doing this, were you mostly communicating over the internet? Did you have any meetings where the three of you got together in person?
No in-person meetings. We're geographically challenged, if you will, as far as that's concerned.
So how do those book signings work? Are good, different ones? Are you going to sign in different places? Or
we are. We're going to end out signing individually. We do have some books making the rounds to each one of us so that we can all sign them and then redistribute them so that you'll have all three signatures, if you will, but we are going to be doing some individual signings as well.
Okay. Well, I want my copy with all three. I want the deluxe version here.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
Now, your book looks at deaths of unarmed citizens and the arrest process. Why are you keying in on unarmed citizens in this book?
I think that most people will agree 100% that when someone points a weapon at a cop or another civilian, that stopping that threat is something that we expect the police to do. So when we started seeing these killings, if you will, by the police of people, especially in the black community, where they were unarmed, and then the question that came out is whether these killings were justified. And it comes down to whether the police are treating people in the community fairly. So we chose this particular subset of unarmed people who died in order to maximize the chances of actually finding unjustified uses of force. And one of the main things that we discovered was by reading this, or by looking at the cases, is that unarmed does not necessarily mean not dangerous.
Well, especially when in some of these cases, people have gone and still attacked the police officer. Sometimes they're on drugs, sometimes they're just not thinking. And you can have somebody, this took place in the case in Ferguson. The guy was actually attacking the police officer, wasn't he?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Just because the person is unarmed, when a person is in close proximity to a police officer who is in uniform and armed, just the mere fact that the officer is armed and the person is in close proximity and has their hands on the officer avails them the chance to become armed very quickly. And indeed, there are several hundred cases that we could look at in the past where officers have been disarmed of their own service weapon, and that weapon was used to kill that officer.
Yeah, lately, when I've been in Starbucks and I see a uniformed police officer come in, I'm just walking up, and not every time, but often, and telling them I appreciate their service and that I'm enraged over the bad rap they're getting. They seem so appreciative. I'm wondering, what kinds of things are you hearing? You'll have some moments to think about it over the break, but I want to ask you when we get back, what kinds of scuttlebutt you're hearing from the police department? Are they just feeling like they have to walk on eggshells now? We'll be right back. This is Bob Siegel for Skyline Church. Jesus said that his people should be the salt of the earth and the light of the world. Some churches take that mandate seriously, others sadly do not. I am happy to announce that there are many good, serious churches in San Diego, and Skyline is certainly one of them. Outreaches to the community and the world at large are carried on by our missionary family. Their ministries to the poor, the shut-ins, and the emotionally scarred. There are groups and classes for all ages, from children to middle school to high school, college, young adult, and senior citizen. Skyline is also on the cutting edge of today's social issues. We mobilize people and help them to be a better voice for the changing culture around us.
Skyline Church, Sunday morning services at 8:30 a.m. and 10:30 a.m.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. My guest today, very special guest, is Ed Flossy, retired police sergeant, and he served on the police force 27 years and is the author of the book, In Context, Understanding Police Killings of Unarmed Citizens. Ed, welcome back to our program.
Thank you.
And so I was about to ask you, what are you hearing now from police officers? Are they almost feeling like they have to walk on eggshells now because of the way public opinion is being molded in the news media?
Yeah, you know, Bob, I travel throughout the country doing trainings with police officers, and I speak to them during and after class, and I try to get a feel for that exact issue. And the feeling that I get is that officers feel that they're being vilified mostly by the media to satisfy certain agenda pieces. But across the board, what I hear from them is, although they feel they're being vilified and sometimes they feel like they should just go and hide and not do their job, that that's exactly what they will not do, that they were sworn to do a job and sworn to protect, and that they will be there regardless of what the agenda is. They'll be there to do what they need to do.
Well, I'm very glad to hear that. So you have not met any police officers who said, oh, the heck with it, who needs us, I'm going to retire and do something else?
Of course, there's a few.
But not very many.
The majority of the officers feel the heat. They understand that the heat is on right now as far as this agenda of vilifying the police officers. But they're willing to ride it out and do what they need to do. It's partly, I guess, if you want to put some blame, we've had examples of bad cops. I don't think it's the norm, obviously, but what the media tends to do is they tend to grab onto these very outlying cases and make them seem like they are the status quo. And that's far from being the case. And the officers out there know that and they understand that. And I feel that they're just kind of riding the wave right now, kind of keeping their head down a little bit, but they're going to continue doing their job.
Well, in any profession, in any people group, in any religion, you're always going to have some bad apples that don't honestly reflect it. And those that want to seize upon that will always seize upon it for political gain or any other agenda.
Absolutely. And we see that all the time. We saw it in Ferguson, where an officer who conducted himself as per his training and as per the law was vilified and his career was ruined.
And is he ever going to be able to be a policeman again? Not that he probably even wants to, but he would never be able to be a police officer again, would he? I mean, legally he could, but in reality, would he ever be able to do that?
That's a great distinction. Yeah, I agree that legally he could absolutely get his badge back somewhere else and start working. But practically, he would have the spotlight on him all the time. People would be watching all the time, and it would almost be incompatible for him to be a police officer anymore.
You know, Ed, I know this could never happen, and I know this will never happen, but if every police officer in the United States just went on strike for one day, the anarchy that would ensue, I don't think we'd ever have a problem like this again.
Unfortunately, or fortunately, I guess, police officers are bound by law. We can't strike.
I agree. We don't really want it to happen, but boy, there's a part of me that's thinking it might be just what our country needs.
Right. And there have been examples throughout the country in the past of what some agencies called a blue flu, where officers got together and decided that the majority of them are going to call in sick on a particular day. And the people that were calling in for help and had emergencies had to wait a very, very long time in order to get police services. So I don't necessarily condone that action. but I think you're right. It would definitely put a mark on the calendar.
Well, the policeman in New York City being put under the hands of that mayor is probably about as close to that as we might get. But anyway, getting back to the subject of arrest, can you give us some examples of cases in which unarmed people were dangerous?
Sure. There are actually two cases. And what we did is we looked at the year 2015 and we found 153 cases where unarmed subjects died proximate to the arrest process. And in two of these cases, the person that was ultimately died had murdered other civilians. And in one case in San Francisco, the person had just beaten to death a 96-year-old man that he was the caretaker for. 42 of these subjects in the 153 had just committed some type of robbery or domestic violence attacks. Many were engaged in serious felony crimes or had injured civilians during the crimes that drew the police to the scene.
Wow. And you've got some other cases too?
Well, yeah, there's several that we can go through, and the book outlines them one by one. We actually go month by month. We start in January of 2015, and then we look at the case, and we give the reader the context of the case, and then each one of the authors offers an opinion afterwards. So I don't want to give up too much about the book, but I just can tell you that there are plenty out there of the 153. Like I said, the 42 of them were in the act of some kind of serious felony commission crime.
Okay, now obviously you brought your own experience to bear, but you were working with some other authors. What did you set out to learn? What additional information did you seek out to round this book out and make it more comprehensive?
I just wanted to understand the context behind these events. What you see a lot from the Washington Post and the Guardian are just simply numbers. They want to publish numbers that are large and scary. For example, if I were to tell you that 153 people died while in, you know, proximate to the arrest process of the police in the year 2015, you would think, oh my gosh, that's just a crazy number. The police are out of control. And that's kind of the sentiment that they're trying to put out there to try to provoke that anti-law enforcement rhetoric that's going on now. But we just don't see that. When you look at the context of the actual cases, what we find out is that, in, for example, 46% of all the cases that we looked at involved people that were either in a drug overdose state or in some kind of mental health crisis. So it's not that the police are out of control. It's that the situations are sometimes out of control. And quite honestly, when we looked at it really deeply, out of the 153 cases, and remember, we're only looking at unarmed people, only 7.1% of those 153 cases were cases that we could actually look at and say the officer was probably unjustified in this case. So, and that's not just our analysis. The Washington Post, when they did a post-analysis as well, they concluded that 90% of the shootings by the police in 2015 were apparently justified.
Well, that has always seemed to make sense to me. I was actually dismissed from jury duty one time because it was a case where a police officer was going against somebody else. He was being arrested for drinking. Well, I'll tell you what happened when we get back. My guest is Ed Flossy. We'll be right back.
Bob Siegel's new novel, The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, is available. What better gift can parents or grandparents offer to their children than a story which promotes Judeo-Christian values? But don't look for anybody standing on a soapbox. Instead, the message is presented through an exciting, humorous, entertaining fantasy adventure with a talking cat
and a magic ornament that grants wishes, but only at the expense of causing a lot of trouble. By the way, adults have loved this book as much as kids, so it will actually make a great Christmas gift for anyone you know. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available at Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
There's a brand new book that you want to pick up. It's called In Context, Understanding Police Killings of Unarmed Citizens. The author, Ed Flossy, is with me. He authored this along with two other people. Ed, welcome back to our program.
Thanks, Bob.
I was mentioning that I got dismissed from jury duty because they were asking if any of us would have a bias predisposed toward the police officer in a case. And I said, well, you know, I realize police officers could lie like anybody else. I said, but I'm inclined to think that anybody who would choose law enforcement for a career is probably an honest person 9 out of 10 times. Well, that got me out of jury duty, but I was also just speaking the truth. And wouldn't you agree with that? Aren't most police officers just by nature of picking this profession showing that they're people that aren't out there to do crooked things?
No, absolutely. I would say it's even higher than 9 out of 10. Before a police officer is even hired, there are several examinations that they go through, including psychological examinations, lie detector tests. What we don't want is somebody who has a problem with telling the truth, carrying a badge, and then coming in and being able to testify, especially in a court of law, and not testify to the truth. We don't need that. We don't want that. When we identify that, it's our job as police officers also to remove that person from having the badge and then do the appropriate investigation. And if the investigation leads to the prosecution of the cop for lying, then so be it.
Now, here's a question that I think people would ask. They'd say, can cops really examine what other cops do? Can they do that objectively? What would you say to that?
I think personally, yes, we can. But the key here is total transparency. All of us that were involved in writing this book believe that the badge is an honor and a privilege. And we actually get angry when people say that cops won't do anything about dirty cops. That is absolutely untrue. Each one of us has been involved in a case in our own agency where we had to look at possible misgivings, if you will, of a police officer and do an investigation. And when we train officers, one of the things I do personally is I train officers how to conduct a use of force investigation. And I always tell them that you have to do a fair and impartial investigation and let the evidence lead you to your conclusion rather than coming up with a foregone conclusion and then trying to fit the evidence to fit that conclusion. So I know that cops do bad things, but I don't believe, I really truly don't believe that it's like it is on the television and movies. We recognize that part of the reason for this book is because cops have lied, but we also know that cops are good guys.
And I think you're right when you mention Hollywood and the movies, because these days in almost any cop movie, the big punchline at the end is that the chief of police was somehow the guilty guy or was in cahoots. Or, I mean, we've seen it so many times, it's not even a surprise ending anymore. It's just bad writing, but it's really given the cops a bad rap in the real world.
Yeah, and what they want to show is not only is the chief, that it's systemic throughout the entire agency, that the entire agency is bad. They're out there, they're corrupt, they're lying, they're convicting the wrong person just to make numbers. And that's really not what it's about. When I was still on the job and I would go into court, I actually had no skin in the game as far as bias. My job was there to testify to the evidence. And if the jury were to find the person guilty or they were to acquit the person, it matters not to me one way or the other. I'm just there to present evidence.
Absolutely. You're just there to do your job.
Right.
Now, I wanted to turn a corner because obviously the whole subject of law enforcement and violence was in the news this week. It's a rather big elephant in the room. Before we turn this corner, is there anything else you want to say about your book? And also tell our audience again one more time exactly where they can find this book.
Okay. Yeah, there are a couple of really key findings besides the fact that there was a large percentage of the people who were either in drug overdose or in mental health crisis. Another thing that we discussed was that law enforcement agencies should really release data a little quicker as long as it doesn't compromise the investigation, because when there's the no comment response, then that leaves it up to the media and people to come up to their own conclusion, which is generally far from the truth. So I think it behooves the agencies to disclose information as soon as possible, including video if it's available, and again, with the caveat that it doesn't compromise the investigation. Some other things that are really important to understand, because this is one of the things that we're looking at, were, you know, how many of these deaths involve shootings, and only about half of them involve shootings. Other than that, the deaths were mostly caused by the person being so intoxicated on drugs or other issues that they had, health issues that ended out the cause of their death.
Like that guy that was in the van who was bouncing himself around and then they blamed the six officers?
Right, exactly. There's a whole bunch of different cases where the person was under the influence of methamphetamine, actually had lethal dosage of methamphetamine on board, and the medical examiner said this guy was going to die anyways. The police just happened to be there. It's those kind of cases. Well, I think one of the key findings, at least for me, because of the issue of race-based policing, as a lot of people were saying that the police were unfairly targeting a certain community, the black community, and our data is clearly presented in the book. So if anybody wants to read it and disagree with it, it's in there. But our data shows that there's absolutely no targeting by race within that 153 people. And I think that was a very key finding, because the media agenda is just the opposite.
And of course, there are many African Americans that are police officers, and some of them have even gotten implicated, and then they get accused of racism, too. It's ridiculous.
Right. Yeah. And going back to what you're talking about, the Baltimore case.
Yeah. Three of the officers accused were African American.
Exactly. Yeah. And from what I understand, their case is pretty much falling apart.
Oh, that one's imploding. I think the DA there is going to have a lot to answer for.
Yeah. So getting back to the book, it's published and being distributed by Caliber Press. It's available on Amazon.com and also as a Kindle and a book e-book or Nook e-book. So it's out there. And the title, as you said, is In Context, Understanding Police Killings of Unarmed Civilians. And it, like I said, it's a read that's very enjoyable. You can actually break it up month by month, so you can take your time and go through the book. The font is very nice and easy to read.
Okay, well, I'm honored that you came on to talk about it, and I hope that people will read it, because I think the police are really a very righteous group of people that are getting very misunderstood and getting a real bad rap. Now, I wanted to ask you a little bit about the news. One of the things, of course, that came out in the news, which I assume you've been following in Orlando, was that there were several hours between the time when the cell phone calls came out and when the police actually arrived. And I've heard explanations from the police department about why it needed to take a while. And then I've heard other people complain that they just didn't get there fast enough. Well, what's your whole take on that?
In those kind of situations, that it's a fluid situation, very highly tactical type of decisions have to be made. The agency needed to make sure that they had the proper number of resources and the proper resources there as well. The military equipment that a lot of people want to shout at police officers for having was absolutely needed in that situation. In fact, the ballistic helmet saved that one officer's life and allowed him to continue to go on and save other people's lives.
Ed Flossy, thank you for being on our program. We hope to have you on again sometime.
Thanks, Bob.
We'll see you next week, everybody.
Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170, The Answer, is sponsored by Bob Siegel.